I would like to call to order the Mountain Regional Water Administrative Control Board meeting for July 18th, 2024. Andy, do we need to go into executive session?
We do not.
Do we have any public present?
Just our two employees.
Okay. Yeah. Great to have you guys here. I'm glad the program is a success. I think it's been fantastic. Okay, does anyone have any questions on the consent agenda? We've got the meeting minutes and the check register. Ian, would you like to hear first?
Sure, thank you. So, a couple of non-specific questions. Start with one of the line items. Neil Fisher, general release accord and satisfaction. What is that?
So it's a driveway that we had to go through to fix a leak up in Summit Park. And instead of getting caught between the contractor and somebody trying to fix their driveway and do other improvements, we'll just pay the low bid. And Dave last year had written us a release that we use. So we've used it twice last year and once this year.
All right. What's the satisfaction part of it?
Means they can't come back at you.
Oh, so it's a legal term.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, cool.
Yeah, accord and satisfaction is a type of settlement agreement.
Okay.
Yeah, before we issue him a check, he's got to
sign it. Like, this is it.
This is it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Okay, and then just kind of like a general question about both of that. We've got a lot of it, expenses coming in on the new building. So we had an original budget. We've got all these things coming at the time. Or do we have like a separate register somewhere where we're tracking everything that's coming in for the building versus our original budget?
We have our original budget and then what we spent against it. And we're still, and when I go through the financial review, I'll kind of show you that line item. That doesn't show like where all the different sources came from, because as you remember, like we transferred some of the old regionalization reserve, we had some just out of budget, and then we got the loan. It's kind of a combination of all those is what we've got about $20 million allocated for the infrastructure, everything, and you know, we spend $1 million so far.
It sounds like you've got a general line item.
Yeah. I track it as one line item.
All right.
Yeah. And Ian, I want to, if you want to see the breakdown from the pay application each month, we can provide that to you.
I don't know if we need it on a month, but it would be good to like look at it, you know, a few times. I mean, this is like a year and a half process or whatever. So
yeah, just to kind of know how we're doing.
Yep.
Right. If we're getting any change
kind of orders. Yeah. It's easy. Are we on track or are we going way over budget? Because we knew there was some risk with cost increasing and everything.
So we have contingencies and everything built in. We're finding little things right now. I mean, $10,000, literally $10,000 was the first one. But we have enough with the budget unless we make changes. The wild card in all of this is what the county's going to charge us for the initial excavation and everything. So we're either going to pay our attorney a different hourly rate, or we're going to pay for excavation.
Excavation. Okay.
But next month I'll bring up a list. I'll have something prepared.
It doesn't have to be like super detailed.
I keep detail anyway for myself. Okay. So it's pretty simple.
I was guessing that. All right. And then last one, in the credit card things, there was one on, somebody had done something on the clothing allowance. Remind me, what is our clothing allowance for a year? And is it the same for all employees or?
It's not the same for all employees. We do 300 they can spend on like clothes of their own, but mm-hmm. then above that they can buy boots and things like that. It's more for operators, although there is a little bit for the office staff and things like that. So we can have some logoed wear. The overall budget for the whole company between what we do, I mean, just buying t-shirts and hats and things like that is about $27,000 a year.
Is it high enough? Does it seem like that line item, like somebody had to put some on a personal card? And
they were getting a little too, I left it in there, but the whole detail, I think he was just being really good. It was fun. I think just resold a pair of boots instead of buying a new pair of boots because he bought some stuff the year before. And he's just really good about not wanting to go over budget, let's say.
All right.
And one of the reasons why we've kind of separated boots out is a pair of boots, good steel toe or composite toe, can be $250.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah. which you should, because I mean, there's all sorts of safety stats on low cost steel toe boots can lead to plantar fasciitis and all sorts of like long term problems. So you really should have the best steel toe boot. Yeah, we've been able to get. Okay, that's it for me.
I had a couple questions that I wanted to see if Mike, you or Corey, have any questions on the check register. Okay. I just had a question. It looks like we returned a mini excavator early, which resulted in like a $10,000 lease overage and a damage waiver on it. And I was, is it something we didn't need anymore?
What we did is we found that our lease on the mini, it was a 3-year lease. We had gone over the hours. So it was costing us more to keep that machine rather than just turning it back in and releasing a new one.
Gotcha.
So we got a credit for turning it in early, released a new one, and then paid the overage on the hours. And on the new lease, we made sure we got more hours on it.
Okay.
Because that tends to be the favorite digging machine, right? Is the mini instead of the full-size backhoe.
Makes sense. Yeah. That's where we have to work.
So we just learned a little bit from, oh, we need to get more hours on that lease. And so it should work out better.
What's the advantage of leasing those versus buying them?
We've gotten burned a few times by owning backhoes and things like that, that just the repairs on them can
be money pits.
Yeah. Okay. Whereas this way, we know we're always going to have good functioning equipment.
Understood.
I like it.
We had a $12,000 vehicle repair.
We had an engine that went out in one of our newer trucks, newish trucks, but it had just gone over warranty. Mm, right. So we had to put a brand new engine in, like an F-350.
Was it a 350 or 450?
350.
And then we had something called stairs for $1,700 from Siemens. I just didn't know if they were spare what.
Spares.
It just said spares.
Meters. Okay, meters are replaced. They might have been replaced in parts.
Let's see. So is our meter vendor? Yeah.
Okay.
For, yeah, like process meters or the master meters.
And then, Brian, on your credit card, what is a dump starter?
Dump?
What? Looked like you had a dump starter for $930.
Dump truck starter.
Oh, dump
truck. We had to get a new starter for the dump truck.
So cryptic, you didn't even know.
It's going to have Steve put it in there. I pay a lot of bills online and get the invoices. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was all I had. So do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Okay.
Should we let Mike come back?
Oh, we should wait.
I'll second it. But.
Okay.
Mike and Joel.
I was 4 for 4 on guessing what the check questions would be until you asked about the spares. I didn't have that one.
Right. That may be somebody who's bowling a lot.
You seem to have a pretty good tracker. Next meeting, you write them down on a slip.
Oh, a little closed envelope kind of stuff. All right.
Let's do it.
I think that would violate the open meeting.
We wouldn't be good at poker.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. We were just waiting for you to get back.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that's unanimous.
And Joel, thumbs up.
Thank you, Joel. Okay, and then we are on to you, Steve.
So this is our mid-year report. So it's a little bit bigger report with a few more appendixes at the end. The year continues to go really well in that revenue is higher than budgeted. Due to water sales and interest earnings are the two biggest drivers on that. As we get into it a little bit more, water usage has gone back to basically 2021 levels overall. But I'll explain what that really means when we get there. But we're $1.13 million over on revenue. 465,000 of that increase or variance to the positive is from the water. 395,000 from interest earnings. The PTIP is still paying not 5.4%, which is great. So Impact fees did have an interesting turn. Usually June, July, August are our biggest impact fee months. June this year was actually our lowest month so far. We collected just under 24,000. So we're still above budget, but we came much closer back down to budget. And July's not going crazy either. So I think we're going to end up closer to budget by the end of the year. It seems like there's been a slowdown on new requests, new impact fees. So if you look at the first 6 months, that next one, that next table down, you can see the variance in residential. We kind of talked about that. A lot of that was faster, people connecting faster than we thought. So switching from standby to water users, and then with the usage being up overall, it's just pushed us above budget. Obviously irrigation and irrigation golf, with June being 100-degree, well, not up here, but high 90s, mid-90s, they were really cranking a lot of water outside that we didn't get last year at this point in time. Expenses, we've been doing really well on expense. Repair expense had been a big saving so far. July, we've actually started to see a tick up in that. More repairs, some leaks, you guys all know. So
that's been a finder.
Yeah. And some pump repair work that's come through too. So our positive variance there will probably go down a little bit. The non-O&MR is always easier to budget. That's the stuff that doesn't have as much variance. So that's why that's pretty close to budget. And then just a little bit of a highlight. So on the interest expense, you'll notice our interest expense has basically doubled from last year to this year. But that's the Series 2023 bond. But also our interest income has about doubled from last year. So it's still funding itself for a while. So that's kind of how, that's why if you look at expenses and overall, that's why that 18% jump from last year, a lot of that is just the interest expense jump, not operating expense jump.
Are the interest rates pretty similar, or are we making money on that? Are we leasing
a lot of money? We're paying 5.11 on the bond, and we're making 5.4. So
that's good.
We can't, but over time, you can't make money. You have to pay it back. Arbitrage kind of thing, but yeah. Since we're paying down the loan, I think we'll be fine by the time it is. Because every time we get a big payout, I say, okay, give me construction funds, so we don't earn interest there. We earn interest on our own. It comes into our own funds that we make interest there.
Oh, okay.
So it's treated differently. So it's important to kind of get that money flowing out of those restrictive funds into our own funds.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's look down a little bit. So cash. The big variance in June is mid-year, we make a lot of bond payments. So we made some large bond payments. So in the line that's debt reserves held by trustee, that went down $700,000. Basically, we put $400,000 in that. They took about 1.2. We made some interest, but that's why the big drop in cash in June. Cash will definitely go up because of revenue collections, but also cash could start going down because we're finally getting some decent sized payouts on the building. We paid Oakland like $340,000 this week. So you'll see that kind of balancing right now. All right, and then capital budget. So that top line item, Ian, is kind of what I was talking about, office and maintenance shop. So overall, we budgeted $20.8 million between everything we pulled, between the loan, the regionalization reserve, the money we had in the capital budget. We spent just over $1 million. So we've still got planned to spend about 19, or could spend 19.8. Our not to exceed contract is about 15.6.
$15,356,945.
With Oakland. So the difference is the infrastructure that we're going to have to pay the county and just other miscellaneous kind of things like that. But that's kind of big picture. But I'll bring more detail on that. The solar array won't steal anybody's thunder, but it looks great. And we spent the $650,000, got another $1.1 to spend. As you recall, once this ends, we're going to get reimbursed a lot from Blue Sky and the tax credit. See, so those are kind of the highlighted items. Sam's been working on some engineering design stuff for future year projects. down a little bit. Old Ranch, we've been sending out that quote for the generator, trying to get that knocked down. And Summit Park Well 5, we've got some expenses finally in July coming through, I think, on that one too. So, yeah. But the building's obviously the big one we're watching this year. And customer growth, kind of back to what I was commenting earlier, we only had, if you looked at last month, we'd had 50 new connection requests at the end of May. We only have 54 now. We got 4 new ones in June. That was surprising. So we're back to, you know, a historical growth pattern, let's say. And then promontory is up to 16 lots for the year, so more than last year, but less than the 4-year average as well. And okay, so this is what I wanted to talk about a little bit. So if you look at consumption this year in the purple, so we've got 320 acre feet by our customers. It's a lot higher than the last 2 years and close to like 2021, 2020 levels. And if you look at the year-to-date numbers, it kind of is the same, 726 for year-to-date, you know, and you go back to 2021, 20. So it's about the same. What has happened is we've had about 18% growth in customers since June 2021. We've gone from 4,713 connections to 5,569. We've grown 856 connections in 3 years.
Wow.
So just about 18%. Our usage is just under those levels overall, big picture. So it makes sense because our customers' usage on average per connection has gone down more than 18%, like about 18.5%. So we're able to serve a lot more customers with the same amount of water. Part of that is a product we've been coming on. A lot of it's been Silver Creek that aren't big water users and things like that. Part of it's conservation, all of those things. So it's kind of interesting that how those have balanced out. We've had about 18% growth, but we've had 18% drop in usage per connection. So we're using about the same amount of water. All right. And then I think these are just more detail that I include in these quarterly reports, just kind of all the detail that builds up to the little tables I put at the top. And go ahead and scroll down. Cash, kind of the same thing, more of where it sits in all the different accounts. And then the graph. So you can tell the difference between the purple line last year and the blue line this year. Because no irrigation last June, and then you throw in growth and heavy irrigation hot June, and you can see a big jump in revenue along with our rate increase. I have been starting to run some models on rate increase, what we'll be needing for this year, so stay tuned. But things are, with the growth, I'm hoping we can have good, I mean, we'll still have to have one, but maybe not what we thought it would have to be. So, all right, any questions?
No, I just had the question on the interest rates.
Okay.
I was surprised at how far we bumped.
Yeah. Because I would have thought we'd be above the red line because of the rate increase, but I didn't think it'd be that big a bump. I would have thought.
Didn't we change our conservation rates or the structure of how it increases?
We did that the time before, but they didn't really kick in because usage wasn't really high. This year we were more flat. We did kind of an 8% across the board. Yeah. What I'm running right now is to go more conservation minded again. Keep base and first tier two at a significantly lower increase than the conservation tiers.
Yeah.
But we're having people go back into those high tiers again that weren't in them the last 2 years.
But didn't we increase what they pay when they're in those high tiers? Several years ago?
Yes. That is still generating revenue.
But it's not, I guess where I was going is it's not influencing people to change their behaviors.
Well, this is going to be their first big bill.
Well, we kind of...
Okay. Yeah, good point.
Well, usage is down for us.
Yeah, usage is down.
But, you know, looking at large residential or, I don't know if you went into that.
I didn't go into that much detail yet or on this report, but
this was also a really hot June. I don't know if anybody else, but we had like no rain and it was really hot.
Yeah, we're set records again.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, and last June was, it was still snowing and cold and raining in June. Yeah. Because nobody turned irrigation on until mid to end of June. So,
yeah. But I guess even compared to like 21 and 22, I guess that, yeah, so I mean, it's the same message. It's just, it's primarily that growth.
And usage. Usage like 2021, but with 3 year, with a couple of rate increases in there too.
Well, and we've got
a lot more base.
Yeah, and the rate increase helps the dollars drive higher.
Yes.
And more people have come off standby.
Yeah. The other thing that is kind of to your point and what Chris was saying is we did see some sticker shock the year we put in the drought rates. Because if you recall June, people kind of used water kind of like normal. And a lot of people got their first water bill in at the end of June and we're like, oh, I gotta change my pattern.
Yeah.
So we might see a little bit of that in July. It's been just so hot. How much can people really change? But there might be a few who will see like, wow, I don't want $1,000 a month water bill. I'm going to trim it back down. Kind of thing. So.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. I think I'm done.
Great job as always.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Then we're on to you, Andy. Consideration for recommendation of approval of the annexation of parcel PP-S-MC-1.
So this is a parcel that's owned by TCFC up in the colony. You can see the blue outline area is the entire parcel, but we're only annexing in the red portion. They're going to potentially build 12 single-family homes on those lots. I don't know all of the detail, but there was a settlement with the county in 2022 about this. This petition actually was sent directly to the county, so we need to get the original and then clean up the legal description before it goes to the county council. This is not an unexpected request from TCFC.
Yeah, so just in reference to areas, I know you mentioned earlier when you came in that it was hard to determine where this is. So relatively speaking, so this is the bottom of Thames Canyon, which you're going to ski out. That's the bottom of Thames. This is Pinecone Ridge right here. The parcel that the 90 acres they're talking about is this, out of a much larger overall piece. So the 90 acres is the total that will be the 12 lots when they're done. The first part they're doing is this upper piece. I don't remember the acreage on it, but that's there's four lots on the first plat that we're trying to get through the county right now. So this is all the upper phase of the colony, upper phase four stuff and phase five. And so when they were proposing to us to do all that stuff, we already have water from stubbed to that section. So this isn't something that we didn't know about. This is something that they're finally getting around to asking annexation for. So the infrastructure's there. The tank in phase five was sized according to the plan of them having these lots in there. We already knew about it. So it's not unexpected.
It's in the master plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The roads are all cut already.
Yep. But it's in our master plan.
Yeah, it was in numbers that Sam's talked about. Yeah. And it's 12 lots. It's not like a 12 colony lots, but it's not like,
it's 90 acres out of 700.
Yeah.
Sounds like people that'll pay conservation, right?
Yeah.
They don't need to water until June because it's still snowing.
Oh, that's true.
I think they're at like, close to 10,000 feet?
Yeah, a little lower than that, but yeah.
Do we need a motion to... So we're just
making
the recommendation of the county council.
Correct.
Okay.
I will make a motion.
Okay.
For recommendation of approval of the annexation of parcel PPSMC1 into the service area of the district by the Suffolk County Council.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We still have Joel out there?
Yeah, Joel just gave a thumbs up.
Okay, great. That's unanimous. Fantastic. Moving right along tonight. Already on page two.
They do if we denied them water.
I would guess this is you, Lisa. Discussion and possible approval of resolution 2024-0718 about the tier two retirement system. Yeah.
So after our meeting last month, it came to our attention, I guess Dave's attention via URS, that we needed a resolution on what we decided to do with our URS tier two place. So Dave drafted a resolution for the county and his public service folks. I edited it and got his approval for a resolution from outreach. And that's in the
papers. And that's a recommendation to county council?
No, nope, this one we can just
We can just say.
Yeah.
Okay. And
so I just have a question about this. I'm intimately familiar as a tier two employee myself. All tier two employees have been notified that this hypothetically could happen at some point in the future when they kind of signed on and started working, you know, by URS, mm-hmm. right? By giving only the tier two employees who were impacted by the 0.7% increase or overage from the 10%, that 1% raise, are you unfairly leaving out the tier one employees and the tier two non-hybrid employees in some way?
Well, the tier one benefit is different. So if they're all, right. it's already different. Right. And they are already have been, you know, it's a separate plan. So I don't feel like, and I mean, Dave and the county decided the same thing, that that is benefiting them any differently. This was proposed. This is the way the plan was structured. The 10% max has always been there. The legislature decided they didn't want to increase it. So
I guess where I'm coming from is if you've got a tier two defined contribution employee, and these are people who don't have a pension plan, just 401k, and their wages are not increasing, but the tier two hybrid plan.
So in this scenario, we are increasing all tier yes. two regardless.
Tier okay. one, no, but tier then, two, all tier two are getting increased.
Okay, then maybe I'm just reading this. Maybe I was reading the resolution incorrectly when I was reading through the
no, it does just say hybrid.
It does just
it does
say the hybrid.
Say hybrid.
So that's my concern.
I thought, and I edited it to do all, because the county just did hybrid, but we did all employees, all tier two retirement system.
And out of the tier two employees, we only have two that are on the 401. We have three on the 401 bid.
Well, those are the three I'm looking out for, Andy.
That was our intention, is to, for all tier two.
Yeah, I have to make, because only these guys are paying the 0.7. But then I believe down lower, it said that all of the tier two or the tier two system, public employees in the tier two system by 1%. So that's all not hybrid.
Okay.
I had to be specific to the employees who are paying the contribution up above. And then down here, I said specific to everyone gets the 1%.
Okay. Yeah. My concern on this whole thing, and we can go into what has been done elsewhere in Utah, but is that those who are in the defined contribution versus those who are in the hybrid, they made separate decisions, but to reward one half of that subset, or I guess 70% of them, you know, now because the situation has changed in the hybrid system, while not rewarding the other three.
Yeah, we agree. That's the intention, to do all tier
okay.
two. Yeah, I agree.
Tier one and tier two, I believe, are different plans, so I don't feel sure. like that is. But tier two, we did feel like they should be treated the same, because
okay.
technically your contributions are worth less.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood
no,
that.
No, thank you.
Is the title, should that be revised? Because it just says hybrid tier two.
Probably. Yeah, we could say hybrid or the tier two retirement system.
And omit the word hybrid?
Just strike the hybrid.
We're ready for a motion?
Yes.
All right, so motion for approval of resolution 2024-0718
authorizing increasing salary of employees in tier two retirement system per discussion, removing the word hybrid from the title.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And Joel too.
Okay, then it's unanimous. Do you need me to come in tomorrow and sign that? Or do
I can print this out and have you sign it right now.
Okay.
Third revision.
Okay, great. Okay, then we are on to general manager comments.
We are so far ahead of time. I'm going to take 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We would love 20 minutes for me.
Okay. So just going backwards a little bit to the building, the budget was $15,356,945. To date, we've spent $506,136. Out of that, Oakland's received $357. We are required to keep a retainage. This is not does not include the cost of the land, the cost of the excavation, or furniture and things like that. But we are monitoring this week after week. And like I said, we have had one change application in the amount of $10,000 to put some moisture control around both buildings that was omitted. We felt, even though there's rock and everything over there, we thought we better try to do this right the first time. So it's, we can send that to you monthly. We get it monthly. Oakland gives us a spreadsheet, easy to give you. The other thing this past week is I sent you the letter that Margaret Olson sent about the county attorneys. And in speaking to Dave this morning, they are negotiating, proposing, instead of paying a county $40,000 for legal services, that they charge us a $375 hourly rate to be billed in 6-minute increments. You back into it, we kind of did a back of the napkin, you know, do we use Dave 12 hours a month, you know, about $333 an hour, roughly. It will be an impact of the budget, but it may also force us not to use Dave as much if we can do things for ourselves. I don't know if we overburden Dave, but.
You guys are not like High Valley Transit.
So depending, it could come out that we save money, but we're still going to budget probably an increase in our legal expenses next year.
So is that to say that the direction now is an hourly rate rather than
In January.
Rather than a $40,000 flat rate?
Correct.
That's off the table now.
So will we stop? So does that invalidate the franchise fee agreement?
We're going to renegotiate the existing agreement.
Okay.
Because it expires in next year.
Does it? Yeah. Okay.
The interlocal agreement. I think all of them for the districts expire next year. Not sure when next year, but.
Yeah, if I could get in the doctor where I could tell you. I think it's fair. Like I said, I don't think it'll really impact us that much. We will start charging Dave for his dinner and drink, but besides that, it'll be fine.
And we're not gonna let him through the door until 6 p.m.
That's right. That's right. That's
be careful.
No questions.
Like
travel time.
Travel time. I'll start traveling it or charging like a Bangkok kid.
Yes.
Yes.
Our sanitary survey has been scheduled in September of this year. It's the same week as AWWA in Kanab, so we will not be attending that. It's scheduled for that Wednesday, Thursday of that week. The division has already given us some pre-work to do that I believe Jess has been working on. Karen had a chance to go up and look at the solar array about a month ago. They are, I believe all of the panels are in. It is impressive. We have a phone call on August 6th with Rocky Mountain Power and Ameresco to talk about a ribbon cutting date and doing some PR. I think we'll see a lot of traction from that when we come up with that. So we just have to coordinate everyone's schedules and with Rocky Mountain Power and Ameresco and the council and you all. We'll try to pick a date.
You were thinking first week of August?
We have a phone call to start going through.
Oh, that's
that.
Just the start.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So that, Chris will pull up a picture from the pond. Really impressive. I think since you've been there, that whole right side now has been done.
Yeah. Wow.
Can you move that camera around a little bit?
I can. It's wiggling the wind.
Yeah. So it's exciting to see. On our building, 3/4 of the footings and foundations have been poured on the administration building. We'll have our next pour on July 23rd. Then they'll come back in a couple of weeks and start forming the walls. Once that's all done, they will backfill, and then they'll start on the footings and the foundation on the shop. The material storage building has been excavated. That will be following the shop building. The steel will be showing up shortly for the shop building. I'm really impressed with Oakland keeping everything on track. At this point, we are, quote unquote, 6 days behind from our September 2025 finish date, but they are committed to the date and they're committed to the budget. Chris, Brian, Steve, and I meet with them weekly over there and go over things. We are, we will need to install the gas line along Sago Lovely Drive and Paintbrush around the entire outside perimeter of our property. That's also not included in these budget numbers that I gave you. And so we're really being cost conscious on all of that, looking at things globally when we look at the expenses for the building. Lake Rockport Estates is running a parallel path on whether moving forward with Bowen Collins to do a study to come on the district. They're also trying to find an engineering firm that will look at the wells, see if they should rehab the wells, re-drill a new well. So nothing really more has happened with them at this point. We have had four summer employees that have been working feverishly, exercising hydrants and painting hydrants. So they've been doing a great job this summer. I can't believe we're already halfway through July. Yeah. So time is certainly moving. So those are the updates that I have. Do you have any questions?
Saw your quotes in the park record about Rockport Estates. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, really is on them to move it forward. We've done just about everything we can.
Is it $20 million?
That was just we just threw that out there based on what we know.
The $300 a month assessment, is that kind of the...
Just to pay the debt.
And that was just with infrastructure. That wasn't to do roads as well.
That's just infrastructure. That's because all of their pipe, all of their water pipes are shallow, mm-hmm. and it does not go through that whole area, platted area. So I can't remember. One of the residents over there said they had 3 or 4 more miles of pipe to put in. So that alone, and then, you know, who knows if there's got rock or what kind of the conditions are.
Well, there's not rock.
No.
Do they still have an impact fee? When they annex in,
we would have to negotiate that.
Okay.
I mean, that would all be on the table, but they would have to be 100% self-sufficient. We can't burden everyone else with them.
If they're 100%, then probably not an impact fee.
Well, they would, if we had to get a load of debt, bond, grant, whatever, the repayment of those funds would be paid back by those people and nobody else.
Yeah.
Now, whether we can charge them another annexation fee, which I think our rules say we can, I don't know if there would be an impact fee. I don't think we did an impact fee.
I think there wasn't But if somebody builds new in community water or does a remodel in community water, they do get an impact fee. And the same for Stagecoach. So they're paying an interest for the in the groundwater, but when they actually go above ground and start building something, they pay an impact fee, is how our other assessments have worked.
And do they participate in the special assessment?
Yes. So every, so for
separate things.
Yeah, they're kind of separate. So everybody who owns a lot would have to participate in the special assessment. And then the people who have already built don't pay an impact fee because they're already, they have already built. But if somebody goes to a lot that doesn't have a building on it and builds, then they would pay an impact fee.
In addition to the
assessment.
It's still going. Yeah. Assessment only be for like 20 years.
Yeah, for 20 years. Yeah.
And speaking of impact fees, with the schools that are being built, the Trailside School is in the process of doing a remodel, and we prepared an impact fee to them, and they came back and said, no, sorry, schools are exempt from impact fees. Unless you included the school, and this is what I called you about, the school in your IFFP, IFA. Well, we didn't know when we did that. We didn't include it. We do have an opportunity to go back and have a revised impact fee study done for the cost of $5,000 to $10,000. But we're looking at potentially a $90,000 impact fee. So I think it pays for itself. The other thing is, and speaking to South Summit School District, it's possible that they abandon the Silver Summit Academy and build over by the fire station. They own land there. We would want to make sure that we would include that and the Wylam School potential addition up there. So we're working through that, trying to get as much information we can, so we would then re-engage with Bowen Collins and Zions to come up with an impact fee.
That would include those three schools.
Why are they exempt? Just because we didn't expect them to do this?
Probably for the same reason they were exempt from building permits.
Dave, you have 6 minutes to explain.
Yeah, exactly.
They're relying upon
$35
a opinion from the state ombudsman, property rights ombudsman, who didn't seem to completely comprehend how the Utah Impact Fees Act works, because the whole idea of the Impact Fee Act is that you are charging for future capacity in the system, and people are paying that impact fee to reserve that capacity in the system. What the state ombudsman made the assumption of is that all systems, whether water or sewer or otherwise, all systems have excess capacity that is not tied to the impact fee. And they've made this assumption throughout the state of Utah. And as a result of that, what they say is that unless in your impact fee or capital facility plan, one of the things that you have planned for is that specific school, then you can't charge an impact fee for it because you already have excess capacity in your system.
Now, is this only related to public schools, or does this, you know, if some church decided to add?
No, there's public schools.
Okay, so it's like an exception just for public schools.
Yeah, the problem is that that's not really what the intent of that provision of code was. They're driving a truck for it. All the school districts have jumped onto this ombudsman opinion. And of course, the problem is that, generally speaking, the reason why you do a capital facilities plan and have impact fees is because you're getting to be at capacity and you're trying to get excess capacity. So the problem is that the excess capacity that
school district would be receiving for free is make basically pushing someone who's actually paying the impact fee and make it so they can't build. Like I said, it's one of those things that the Ombudsman's Office didn't truly understand what the impact fee was supposed to do.
How long ago did this opinion come down that everybody's latching on to?
Fairly recent, I think in December.
Was it in relation to the Park City schools or schools elsewhere in the state?
This was something.
No, we were in.
No, I think it was in the Burton School District. So as a result of that, more and more schools are saying, well, this is the exception. We don't have to pay impact fees. And so, the response to that is, okay, well, I guess we will amend our impact fee, amend our capital facility, and include your school in it. And we will, in the end, impose that on you. But statute says that you can't delay their project because of impact fee. So it may be that, we'll have to work out something with the county so that they don't get a CO in the end, unless they pay the impact fee in the end, because it'll take you some time to amend your impact fee.
Is there room for negotiating here where we can commission a report for $5,000 to $10,000 to get our $90,000? Could you just go to the school district and say, how about we settle at $60,000 and everybody's happy?
You could try that, but I think those were some of the options that Andy put on the table with the school district. At this point in time, schools are pretty hard charged about using the Ombudsman opinion. So,
and we don't want to lose out on potentially South Summit and Wyland. So,
right. So it's in our interest to do it now.
Yeah. Respond with
Are there any other schools that?
I guess the other ones are in town, like Park City.
I'm just thinking, how far does this reach? There's some preschool type daycare things planning on coming online, PC TOTS. Is it public schools only?
Yeah, it's public schools only. Like I said, I think that the idea was that schools shouldn't be penalized in fact. You've got a lot of excess capacity in systems, and you haven't really, in the case of Jordanelle with the city that they were, had the dispute with, the city hadn't changed its impact fees or updated its capital facilities plan in 15 years. And so basically they were saying, well, so obviously you have lots of capacity. So that, so as a result of that, we got kind of an interesting decision that the school districts are now using to their advantage, and we're stuck in the position of responding to that by showing that they are, having an impact on the system.
So is there any other way to unring the bell, like globally within the state, like from a legislature standpoint or anything?
I don't know the legislature will do anything, because I think the legislature thinks that it's clear that, the Impact Fee Act is the Impact Fee Act, and they'll probably say, well, we think it's clear. So you would have to go to court and get a court decision. The problem is having the Ombudsman decision makes it so that if you lose, you pay their attorney's fees. So I doubt anybody is going to
go to court and challenge it, because the courts are kind of a legal lottery. And, you know, people get mad at me for saying that my profession sometimes, but that's what it feels like at times.
And we did consult with Zions, and we did consult with Bowen Collins, and they also agreed that it makes sense for us to go through this exercise, even though it's going to cost us some money. They disagreed with the ombudsman.
So hypothetically, Park City Schools decides to build a new elementary school, I don't know, you know, over near Stagecoach. Would that be exempt as well? A brand new school building?
Yeah.
That we didn't see coming?
Correct. You'd have to go back in and amend.
It's all reactionary.
So it would be in our interest to effectively do some sort of a parcel search and find every piece of ground Park City Schools owns, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have the land.
Yeah, they have Bear Hollow.
That's kind of what I'm referring to. Right. I don't know exactly where it's at, but...
Now, whether they'll do that before we update the impact, you know, go through this exercise, whether they have anything on the horizon, because, you know, the reports that you're reading is the population of the school district is actually declining.
Sure. I'm just thinking, is there a way to throw a blanket over it and get out in front of the next 20 years?
So from Keith Larson's perspective, the more information we have about the actual structure, the better off he can determine whether or not it has an impact or not. I mean, we're looking at a treatment plant upgrade,
right,
for source. I think that's, you know, that will have an impact.
Well, plus we will update our IFFP and impact fee roughly every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of get what they might do in the next 4 years covered. And then by then be asking the questions of what might happen next for, because we won't ever leave one for 15 years. Like,
yeah. And that time window would accommodate a school, new school being built.
Sure.
It's like, yeah.
Well, you'd like to believe that, but they've built 4 additions in the last year and a half. That
addition, yeah, but you're quite like a new one.
Right.
Brand new, breaking, you know, green ground, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, if they were to tear down a building and replace the exact footprint, then there would be no impact.
Right.
But in the case of Trailside, they're putting on an addition to accommodate 303.
Yeah.
More students.
Yeah.
So they're in the district, but we just didn't foresee.
We did not know it was a requirement specifically for schools. So in every other forecasting model that we did based on subdivision growth, yeah, you know, the Colony Promontory behind us, those are the things we looked at. No one said you have to go to the school district and say,
are you going to grow?
Are you going to grow?
Are you going to need more water so we can provide?
Correct.
Wait, on the foundation thing, what if they go up? They add more capacity in the school.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a square footage thing, not just
footprint.
And I will say that this is the second school that we're dealing with, and there was an impact paid on the first
one. Which one was that, Jeremy?
Yeah, that was Carlisle, yeah.
So our impact
fee was probably before December of last
year. It was this year.
That's
why we're over budget.
So that's the other hedge.
I don't know. They might.
They haven't.
Yeah, but Bowen and Collins can probably turn this around pretty quick. Since it's just
month or two.
Yeah.
So. Well, we have to go through. We have to go through council.
Yep.
For the impact fee facility plan approval. Well, board meeting, then recommendation to council, then the IFA has to be done, and then we have to do a rate study. So this is going to be like minimum 3 to 4 months, probably.
Outside of this room, is this a political issue where the county council is going to be like, well, no, we like the schools better than we like Mountain Regional. Like, we're just going to leave it how it is.
I'm not quite sure what the...
No, I don't think so. I think this is a new argument that's being used. I think everybody uses these same entities to do their forecasting. I mean, you're using the same 5 or 6 firms statewide to put these capital facilities plan and forecasting together. And none of them, you know, saw this as coming. And they're the ones who mainly work with the legislature on doing the Impact Fee Act. And I think So it's caught them off guard. I think it's the reason why they've said they disagree with the opinion of the ombudsman. But nobody wants to roll the dice. And there is a fix without rolling the dice. And the fix is to re-go through and update the capital facilities plan. And then understand in the future that when they do that forecasting, they're going to start drawing in the school districts into the forecast.
So is there any chance this could be rolled out to any other kind of development stuff? I mean,
what do you mean?
Well, beyond schools, like
no, it is something very unique to public schools because public schools have the ability to have their own, to pull their own building permits and have their own building inspectors.
Well, I was thinking about like UOP, right? I mean, they think they're their own little fiefdom up there and don't have to apply to a lot of rules. I'm just wondering if there's.
Okay. It's not going to apply to them. This is something that is very specific for schools, very specific restrictions on what you can and can't require of a school district to do. Down to sidewalks, you know, how much sidewalk do you have to require them to put in? It's basically just along the school. They don't have to put in any. So if you've got a school out in the middle of nowhere, you know, you've got a sidewalk just to school, that's it.
Sidewalk to nowhere.
So as a result of that, I mean, and a lot of this came about because, you know, there was concerns that, you know, the price of building schools was getting too high. And they were looking for ways to cut down on the cost.
So if we amend our impact fee at the end of the day after 3 or 4 months, it just changes the amount of it? How do we collect it?
It probably will not change. I would imagine it's not really going to change the amount a lot.
How does it then apply to the school?
Well, once we have it, then we can say, you do have an impact. And here's the impact. Because what they're relying upon in the statute is the verbiage in the statute that says you can't charge them an impact fee unless they have an impact on your system.
So we just need to demonstrate that.
You have to demonstrate, because that's what they're saying. You're saying, well, you know, we don't have an impact on your system because you've got all this excess capacity. And you didn't put this in your impact fee, so you've already got this capacity. We're not impacting you at all. So the answer to that is to update the capital facilities plan so that you show that, yes, this is part of the future.
It identifies that is an impact.
Yes, that's just insane. Okay, still. We've been talking about it for a week, and I still just can't wrap my head around.
And then the last thing is the RFP for the asset management piece was published today. I can't remember when it closes.
It's a pretty big window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 6 weeks. Working on that, and we split out the financial piece from that. That will be done toward the end of the year, beginning of next year. And that is all. But I probably took 20 minutes.
Yeah. You absolutely took well every bit of it.
Well, I'll give you 10 to the other.
Hey, you know, I had to work for the feeding.
Does anyone have questions on the department updates?
One for Sam. Or Steven. So the Upper Evergreen Waterline Project, is that Evergreen Summit Park? Okay, and I knew there was like breaks there on a regular basis, but it's like it's in the bad level even for some of the parts.
They're just trying to tackle as a whole, given the budget, what is the size of revenue?
Right.
that's a pretty big lease on that.
It's kind of out of function if it's so narrow on that one stretch and like road doesn't probably go. Like we're not going to go to that extent by reinforcing the road. Just not, just bed down properly. Okay.
One of the things we learned is we're better off going on our own for these projects.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to partner, because we end up, because we feed out, we become the county road, bringing over the sewer, bringing to the school, bringing to that.
On that note, Summit County reached out to me specifically, oddly enough, that they're going to do Matterhorn Terrace at the end of this year. And they want us to see if we wanted to participate on the sewer side.
They call us.
Okay. Thought I'd ask.
Wow.
Okay. Well, do that.
No.
Where was that?
I know,
but where was that in our priority list?
I mean, how? It's avoided because that is a scary thing.
Yeah.
It just so happens that our general manager lives on Matterhorn Terrace, so that's going to be fun.
Have you set the county called off in the engineering though?
No.
We don't have a lot of problems with that.
I know.
All right, a couple more, and then I'm just going to compliment Anna. 1,233 backflow reports. Number seems higher than normal. Yes, the team. And then, Brian, the private hydrants, how many of those do we have? Is there a lot of those in the district that we have to maintain, but they're...
Yeah, a couple hundred. You able to go down?
How does that work? Like they're on private property, but we maintain them. Like we own the hydrant, but
we don't own it, but we have an agreement with them to build them to maintain.
Okay, so it's $10 a month.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, so like a colony home or the house on the long driveway, and there's not a hydrant close by. The fire district may require them to have one down. Close to the house.
Every home in the farm has a front.
Yeah.
That's taken 500.
Right. So,
okay. That's the truck.
Right. Then we get reimbursed for that.
Yeah. Okay. If the bottom breaks, we have to do a major repair to build up. Okay.
And then two funny comments. One, I thought it was great that Pine Brook had 3 weeks, so I'm partly happy. So just highlight that for Joel listening there on the beach. And then that photo was brought.
So that's the new part that was put in back in the late 80s or the 90s.
So what causes holes like that? I mean, is it just hot soil or
hot
what?
Hot soil, but I think the whole problem with that is bedding.
It's like it bedded on.
Might have a rock sitting there. Bedding and it just sits there and probably is left also since so they did the problem with good sand bedding or something.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd have any problem with the duffel. But there's usually a rock sitting there that's been touching the pipe. It takes 20, 30 years for it to grow. But
yeah.
It's just a vibration. It's just the main old component.
Where's that brass elbow though?
It's weird.
It's just amazing what water can do over time. Yeah, I've seen the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
They can have a lot of problems with laterals.
So if you look at that.
Wow.
And then look at how it just wore.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
Most bad city proper installation like that never was done wrong. Over time, usually.
Is that the one yesterday?
No, that's last week, 2 weeks ago.
Where they put the monkey wrench.
Huh?
It's where they put the monkey wrench.
That's weird. A lot of times, you know, if the hairline cracked, it was just there and where it was crossed there. We've been fixing a lot of over there.
discovery and prospective. Not a real discovery. We should be good to the block that helps us raise the issues.
That's all I had.
Do you guys have any questions on the department update? I had a couple of questions. On Sam's report on jailhouse well number 3, can we still use that well, or did we have to shut that one?
Yeah, so this is just an effort. The detections are below regulatory limits, so we're still able to use the well, and they're not necessarily spiking or increasing, they're kind of steady. But the fact that we've seen this steady concentration detected for the past few months, we're trying to understand, can we even understand, like, are there any industrial users in the area that might be contributing to the plume? So recently we've just been meeting with them, saying like, hey, here's what we're doing. We're not trying to point fingers. We're just trying to see everyone in the source protection zone. What are you doing? Do you use this chemical? What are your practices? And then educate them on what the best practices are. So it's more of a investigation and education, because it's just odd that we've seen it detected for so long, but not necessarily increasing or decreasing, just being kind of settling below regulatory limits.
But this is a different well than the one that we did shut down for the PFAS.
Oh, correct. Yes.
Yeah, jailhouse is at the...
Yeah.
So think of like if Triumph or brothers in the area.
So jailhouse is probably by the jail, and then the PFAS one was over...
Between the fire district and...
Yeah, okay. And then I had just one question on your picture, on your two new panels. I couldn't, so is the little panel replacing the big panel, or?
So, actually, yeah, the little one was down below was the original one, and it had been mounted there. We had to temporarily put it below, and then the new panel on top actually is a much better solution than what was originally in place there. It was came with the seal water, that 3 panel, right?
Yeah. Did anyone have any other questions? Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks, guys. We're adjourned. Thanks, Joel. At.